books in the Bible that have come to be called the wisdom literature: Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Job.
And all of these books are addressing the same set of questions. What kind of world are we living in? And what does it look like to live well in this world?
So, how to be good at life?
Yeah. So each of these books tackles these questions from a unique perspective, and it's important to understand all of them to get a fully biblical perspective on the good life. So as a thought experiment, you could actually imagine each of these books as a person. So Proverbs would be like this brilliant young teacher, and Ecclesiastes the sharp middle-aged critic, and Job would be this weathered old man who's seen a lot in his day.
We're going to start by meeting the book of Proverbs, the brilliant young teacher. And she's not just smart, she's smart about everything. Work, relationships, sex, spirituality. She has incredible insights, things you wouldn't see on your own.
Yeah, she would be the perfect friend to have around when you need really specific advice.
So what makes her so smart?
Well, Proverbs can see things that most people don't see. She believes that there's an invisible creative force in the universe that can guide people in how they should live. And you can't see it, just like you can't see gravity, but it affects everything that we do.
So what's this force?
Well, in Hebrew, it's called chokhmah, and it usually gets translated into English as wisdom. It's an attribute of God that God used to create the world. And chokhmah has been woven into the fabric of things and how they work. So wherever people are making good or just or wise decisions, they're tapping into chokhmah.
And whenever someone's making a bad decision, they're working against chokhmah.
Right, or as it says in Proverbs chapter 1, the waywardness of fools will destroy them, but the one who listens to wisdom lives in security.
So it's like a moral law of the universe.
Yeah, it's a cause-effect pattern, and no one can escape it. And Proverbs personifies all of this as a woman.
Yeah, Lady Wisdom.
Right, and she roams around the earth, calling out, making herself available to anyone who's willing to listen to her and to learn. Which leads to the second thing Proverbs believes, that anyone can access and interact with wisdom and use it to make a beautiful life for yourself or for others.
You can create with it like a designer.
Yes, in fact, chokhmah in Hebrew isn't simply intellectual knowledge. The word is also used to describe a skilled artisan who excels at their craft, like woodworking or stonemasonry. So you show you possess chokhmah when you put it to work and develop the skill of making a good life.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's do this. Let's go find some wisdom.
But before you do, Proverbs has one more really important thing to consider. Chokhmah isn't some impersonal force. It's an attribute of God himself. And so in Hebrew thought, your journey to becoming wise has to begin with what Proverbs calls the fear of the Lord. It's this healthy respect for God's definition of good and evil. And true wisdom means learning those boundary lines and not crossing them.
Now, all those ideas you just unpacked are in chapters 1 through 9 in Proverbs. But when I think of the book of Proverbs, I think of the collection of sayings, the Proverbs themselves. Tell me about those.
Yeah, those are what you find in chapters 10 on to the end of the book. It's a collection of hundreds and hundreds of Proverbs about any and all aspects of life. And chokhmah gets applied to them, resulting in this wise guidance to help you find a path towards success, and no matter what you do.
If I design my life with these sayings, life is going to be good.
Yeah, or as Proverbs puts it, it'll give health to your bones, prosperity, a long, rich life.
Which is a really big claim.
But you can see how it's often the case. Wise people, they tend to do better. Things usually work out well for them in life. And so that is the promise and the wisdom of the book of Proverbs.
The book of Proverbs is really beautiful, but if we take a step back, some people would argue it's a little too simplistic, because sometimes horrible things happen to really wise people, and sometimes foolish people get rewarded. It doesn't always work the way we think it should work.
That's right, which is why we need to go and listen to our next wise friend, Ecclesiastes the Critic, because he's wrestled with that very problem, and he's going to push us further in our journey to find the good life.
In the past few months, we talked about how you come alive with gratitude, you come alive with faith. And these next few weeks, we're going to talk about how God makes you alive with wisdom, starting with today, the book of Proverbs. So you saw there on the video how God has kind of taken this idea that we can live a good life, and he's kind of put it into the fabric of our existence, and we can discover it. we can apply it and live, learn to live a good life. But let's start with what the big idea is here today, because I want you to see where we're headed. I want to show you what God's wisdom does. Number one, I mean, in the big idea today, you'll see it put this way: God's wisdom is more profitable than wealth for building a good life. Who doesn't think about, when you're young, living the good life? And now we get to see the good life on Instagram and Pinterest. Everybody's good life can be our life. You just have to do what you see. There it is. It exists. And the idea that we can absorb is that the good life is the acquiring and the control of our wealth. If we acquire wealth, we control our wealth. We use our wealth wisely, we can live a good life. What we learn in the scriptures is that God has designed us to live a good life separate from our wealth, that you can actually find wisdom to be more profitable to live a good life than wealth. That means that you can be wealthy and still live a bad life, but if you are wise, you can find yourself living a good life even if you have no wealth. How many of you would like to do both? Anyone mind doing both? Here we go. Here's how it's put in Proverbs. Check this out. Joyful is the person who finds wisdom. The one who gains understanding, for wisdom is more profitable than silver, and her wages are better than gold. So even the scriptures here are written in such a way as to help us understand that your key to finding the good life is not through your wealth, it's through your wisdom. And that wisdom has been made available to us in three books of the Bible, at least three, plus more, but we're going to talk about in the next few weeks, Ecclesiastes, Job, and Proverbs. Today we'll talk about Proverbs. When you think about wisdom, I want you to think about wisdom in a few different ways. Number one, there's instinctive wisdom. That's the wisdom that you and I have when we're a child to follow our impulses, to do what we want to do, to trust your instincts. This is typical of a child who is following their gut. They're doing whatever that makes them happy. They tend to be driven by their emotions, and that tends to be characteristic of a child or an adolescent. Eventually, we learn to implement wisdom in our lives that's based on observation. This simply means that you watch other people live their lives, and you learn things about the decisions that you make for your life based on watching other people. The good things and the bad things that happen to other people help you learn. I implemented this in junior high and senior high. When I was at Liverpool Central Schools, I watched my friends wander into boyfriend-girlfriend exclusive relationships, and I watched them ruin their young lives by withdrawing from their friends, living isolated and exclusive to a girl. It led to heartbreak and every other kind of confusion and turmoil in their lives, and I made a note to myself, I don't want to live like that. So I waited until eighth grade to get involved. I'm just kidding. Observational wisdom. But then there is inspirational wisdom, which means later on we're adults. Some of us are living in a career as single people, eventually make our way into a marriage and family, and we've been inspired to live in the way that we learned from our parents or our normal life, our culture that we grew up in. So we have this inspirational wisdom that's caught by our systems and the wisdom of our own homes, and we base our lives on what we've always known and what we've learned in our traditions. And of course, that could be great. If you had wise parents with a wise family and you had wise principles that were passed along to you, that could work. I remember some of those principles that I learned in my family weren't that wise. I picked up some things from my parents that I think I've implemented maybe willfully or maybe even inadvertently. I remember learning in my home that Subway is better than McDonald's, but Wendy's is better than both of them. That's what I learned. And now, thanks be to God, I'm old enough and wise enough to see that his restaurant is Chick-fil-A, which is better than. Here's the problem. We learn to live the way we live from the people we love, and while that's good, that won't necessarily lead to the good life. We learn to live the way we live from the people we love, but it won't necessarily lead us to the good life that God wants for us. And God has designed you and I to live a life that is his life and that really makes us function in a healthy way. So many things I learned from my family helped me function in a very, very healthy way. There are other things that I had to overcome in my adult life that I learned from this inspirational wisdom when I was young. For example, one of the principles in my home that was unique to my home was this, related to money and wealth. Here was the principle that we lived by in my home that I realized later on in life that I had to overcome this. And here it was: if you had money, spend it. Money's for spending, not for saving. My parents were generous. They would give their money away or they would spend their money, but there was no such thing in my fabric of life for saving money. And regarding work, my mom had a principle that she lived by. She inadvertently passed it along to us, which is this: if there's something in life you don't want to do, don't do it. Quit, resign, withdraw, change course, do something different. And these are principles that we kind of absorbed. My sister and I laugh about them every now and then, that we've absorbed them. We had to overcome them. And even regarding spirituality, one of the things that we learned in my home was that Christianity was primarily two things. It was what you do on Sunday, go to church, and what you ought not to do in between. That's what we learned. That's what we absorbed. We had to overcome that in order for us to find and live the good life that God wanted us to live. And so the problem that you and I face is most of us are devoted to the principles in our lives that promise us a good life but may not lead to a good life. Let me give you an example. What about American consumerism with the idea that you can actually buy a good life for yourself? This is so troubling that the citizens, or I should say that the American culture has found itself in a situation where the average person who has credit card debt has $16,000 of credit card debt. In other words, if a person has credit card debt, the average amount is $16,000. Now, we also know this. Some of you are like, well, wouldn't that be great if it were only that much? Other people feel the weight of that. What about this? The people in our culture who have an auto loan, on average, they carry $28,000 of financing for their automobile. If you have a student loan, the average debt for those who carry a student loan is $49,000. I would be willing to bet, I haven't studied this, I didn't read this, this is anecdotal, but I would be willing to bet that there's a lot of people who have credit card debt, auto loans, and student loans, right? And this amount of debt has been kind of buries us with the promise that this is the avenue to the good life. This is how we get it. This is how we find it. This is how we experience it. What if it's possible that to get where God designed us to go, we need to know what God intended us to know? What if it's possible that if we want to get something we've never had, we have to do things we've never done? What if it's possible that the good life that God wants for you is going to actually require us to look at the two paths available to us and withdraw from the path that we've been taking and go down a different path altogether? What if it's possible that God has created us to live a good life, and get this, he's also instructed us how to experience it? And you have in your notes here today this title, How to Live a Good Life. So I'm going to show you two specific ways that God instructs us on how your life can be a good life, and thanks be to God, it's separate from your wealth. Separate from your wealth. What if acquiring more wisdom is more profitable for building the life you want than acquiring more wealth? What if having God's wisdom is more profitable than your wealth for thriving and flourishing and the happiness of the soul? Wisdom is a specific phrase, a specific idea. The Bible defines it, and basically it's the ability to use this information and knowledge and to apply it, to think and act in such a way as we make choices that are productive and beneficial for our life. It's not just knowing. It's not just reading, it's not just understanding, but wisdom is the ability to apply it in such a way as we live a productive and beneficial life, and you'll see later on that primarily means to navigate God and his creation in the way that he intended us to navigate it. That's available to us. It's possible for us. You don't get it out of a textbook. You don't get enough knowledge to make you wise. You don't receive understanding from simply hearing other people talk, no matter how smart they sound. Experience might be one of the most valuable tools in acquiring wisdom. It usually comes through experiences. And this reminds me, whenever I get the privilege of doing a little premarital counseling, I like to tell the couple ahead of time, premarital counseling is helpful, but it's not exactly what you need. To learn to be married, you have to actually be married. This is very similar to the way that a pilot learns to fly. How many of you are grateful that the pilot who flies the plane that you're in isn't taking their first flight after finishing the textbook? Right? So what do we trust? We trust that the pilot has been with other pilots, has watched, has learned, has kind of taken control a little bit at a time, and then yielded to the main pilot. And eventually what we discover is, much like marriage, flying a plane requires a lot of practice. You actually have to fly the plane to learn to fly the plane. Wisdom means you have to live life in order to learn how to live life. Most of what you learn from God comes through living your life, and he gives us the wisdom to understand it. We find this wisdom in the books of wisdom. We find this wisdom in the Bible, and in the Bible is a handful of books of wisdom written by wise people. And in the Old Testament, there's three different perspectives on how to live well in God's good world. They reveal the collected wisdom of generations of people who have lived godly lives. They invite us to consider that living in God's world is both complex and simple, and you can enjoy both. These books of wisdom are communicate to us some very specific things. Really quickly, Ecclesiastes says, enjoy everything, because even though it seems meaningless, you can find a way to enjoy what God's given us, even though it's vanity and meaningless. You get to Job, and what you find out is that it is within God's authority and, let's say, his permissive will that people would suffer unjustly. And that much like his suffering servant to come, he allows Job to suffer as his servant. But that would, of course, point to God's his true and better suffering servant, Jesus, who was to come. And then Proverbs, of course, for our own good and the glory of God, the book of Proverbs invites us and instructs us, especially God's covenant people, to embrace wisdom and to live wisely. So what is a proverb? We have a whole book of them in the Bible. Have you come across those yet? They're pretty fun. They're very practical. They help life, really help us face the circumstances of our life and to make wise decisions. But here's what a proverb means. A proverb is a poetic or terse. I suppose that means short, concise, and loaded with meaning. But a vivid, thought-provoking saying that conveys a world of truth in just a few words. They are observations about how life works. Now, here's the thing with proverbs. One commentator said you can't take a proverb like a hard candy and just bite down on it, right? You might get a little sweetness, but you'll break your tooth. In other words, you've got to take proverbs in, you've got to let them sit and rest, and the sweetness starts to permeate your life as you bring together other proverbs and principles, and you get to see how they all create this pattern of living. Otherwise, it would be easy to take one proverb by itself, implement it like nice and briskly, and then it would seem to kind of contrast or be in conflict with another one. Here's what the author says. The commentator says, you take them all in and they create a pattern of living that bring balance to each other and you get a better perspective. So it helps you know what to do. The Proverbs help you to really figure out what to do when your child comes home from school with a black eye. How many of you instinctively know what to do? The proverb says, don't do it. Don't do it. It helps us know what to do when our business goes bankrupt. The Proverbs helps us know what to do when we discover or come upon some wealth that we didn't expect. How do you know what you do? I'm just kidding. The Proverbs helps us discover and helps us navigate what we would do when we lose our job, how to do things that won't make matters worse but would actually make them better. In the book of Proverbs, you'll find a whole bunch of things like this, some themes, knowing wisdom, how to know your heart, how to know other people, how to navigate the themes of life like marriage and family and parenting and sexuality, career, wealth. All of that is explained to us in the book of Proverbs as God helps us to kind of navigate those realities in our life. For our own good, for the glory of God, Book of Proverbs invites us and it instructs us to embrace this wisdom, to apply this wisdom, and really to make an incredible life for yourself using the principles that God has given us. Now, in order to do that, we have to start somewhere. Here's where we start. Number one, you fear God and you implement his wisdom. It's not enough to know this wisdom, but what do you have to do? You have to use this wisdom. And it starts with fear God. You will only put God's wisdom to use if you fear him. You will only put God's wisdom to use if you trust his wisdom, right? So if you fear God, you will use his wisdom. Here's what Proverbs 1:7 teaches us. Proverbs 1:7 says, fear of the Lord is the what? Foundation. It's the beginning point. It's the roots. It's the starting line. You can't find wisdom. You don't splash yourself into wisdom suddenly and surprisingly. Rather, you build wisdom from the fear of God. Now, fear doesn't mean like you're terrified of getting struck by lightning. Fear does not mean that you have a sense of anxiety over God kind of smiting you or being unhappy with you. That's not the kind of fear this is. This is more of a kind of an abiding reverence, humble submission, deep respect for God, for his word, and for his son. This means this kind of fear is tends to cause us to obey. How many of you have recognized both as a child or a parent that your children only obey you if they what you? Fear you, right? You only responded to your parents because you feared them, and your kids only respond to you if they fear you. Now, there's two fears, right? There's two fears. I'm not talking about the fear like wince, cover themselves fear. I'm talking about there's a submitted reverence, respect, and abiding honor for the authority and the expectations of a parent. So we start with wisdom by fearing God, positioning ourselves to submit to, honor, respect, and elevate God, that he himself is the one who has brought us life, and he himself is the one who helps us navigate life. So if there is no fear of God, guess what? There's going to be no wisdom in our life. We're going to do things our way. We're not going to do things God's way. We're going to do things our way. We're going to follow and obey our boss primarily, our spouse primarily, our parents primarily, but not primarily God, because we fear them more than we fear him. Where can you find and experience the wisdom of God? Where can you find it? Look at Proverbs 9:10. You will see it behind me here. The fear of the Lord is the foundation of wisdom. And then I want you to look at that next sentence there. Knowledge of the Holy One results in good judgment. So fearing God means you know God. Fearing God means that you see God and you understand God. And the primary way to do that is this. It is knowing, seeing, trusting, believing, embracing, and adoring Jesus, who is the wisdom of God. Jesus is the true wisdom of God. This is how R.C. Sproul describes it. Everything we need to know about the Father in heaven, everything we need to know, everything that we need to properly interpret existence, our existence, reality, everything we need to live to God's glory is accessible to all believers in the Son of God, in Jesus. Everything God's expecting from us, everything he has for us, we actually discover in his Son, Jesus, who is the wisdom of God. There's three ways that Jesus is presented to us, real quick. He's presented to us as a sage, par excellence, meaning he's the wisest. When he was a child, he's teaching in the synagogues, and the people who were in charge of all the teaching said, "Who is this kid? This kid is full of wisdom." Jesus, of course, is teaching adults as a child. How many of you would be frustrated by that? I'd be so frustrated by that. I would ground him. Like, you're grounded in the tomb 3 days. Like, it didn't work. See what I did there? The little Easter, the little resurrection Sunday. Jesus taught practical, intellectual, moral, and mysterious wisdom. He, of course, used simple, already wise proverbs. He used parables. He used metaphors, beatitudes, figures of speech. Jesus did this as a sage teacher, professor, rabbi. Jesus is also wisdom acted, meaning that in his relationships, most notably his relationship with the Heavenly Father, Jesus acted as the obedient son, perfectly obedient to the Father, as a child should. He, put differently, Jesus in his incarnate nature, perfectly and perpetually feared God. From the cradle to the cross, he walked the way of wisdom, submitted in fear of the Father in heaven. Thirdly, Jesus is wisdom embodied, meaning that he himself is the one who beckons us, invites us, come to me and you will find rest for your soul, and you will literally find fullness of life because you've come to me. Look at how Paul writes this in Colossians when he describes who Jesus is. He says, in him lies hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Where is it? It's in Christ. So to find this good life, we start with fearing God, and to fear God means to receive his son. In other words, you cannot find wisdom and reject the son. If God says, here's wisdom, it's in my son Jesus, you can't have wisdom, not the son. If you have the son, you have all God's wisdom available to you and accessible to you, because in him lies hidden. Now, let me drop some Charles Spurgeon on you. You ready for this? Got your seatbelt on? Here comes Charles Spurgeon. He takes it even further. He describes this even higher. He makes this even more vivid for us. Listen to what he says. But Jesus is equally the wisdom of God. The great things that he did before all worlds were proofs of his wisdom. He planned the way of salvation. Jesus devised the system of atonement and substitution. Jesus himself laid the foundation of the great plan of salvation. There was wisdom. But he also built the heavens by wisdom. And he laid the pillars of light whereon the firmament is balanced by his skill and wisdom. Mark the world and learn as ye see all its multitudinous proofs of the wisdom of God, and there you have the wisdom of Christ, for he was the creator of it all. Get this, wisdom exists, and Jesus doesn't use and access wisdom, he is wisdom. He created wisdom, the idea that wisdom would be a thing. He is the revelation of God's wisdom, the expression of God's wisdom, the example of God's wisdom. He holds all of this wisdom, lives all of this wisdom, expresses all of this wisdom to all of us who adore him and fear him, submit our lives to him. We can trust God's wisdom, and if we trust God's wisdom, check this out, we will use his wisdom. You will not use God's wisdom if you don't trust God's wisdom. Anybody raise children who had to learn the hard way? Anyone raise kids who you told over and over and over again, if you do this, then this? And they were like, well, then this. And over time, they come back to you and say, you know what you said about if I did this, then this happened in my life. You're like, yeah, told you that. And now all of a sudden, after they experience that, they trust your wisdom. Here's what God's saying. If you trust me, you won't discover and learn things the hard way. You will use my wisdom, and you can make a path for yourself that builds a good life, satisfying life, fruitful life, a rewarding life. Number two, here's the other thing we got to do. Not only do we have to fear God and use his wisdom, we also have to do something very specific, and that is to know and avoid human foolishness. We have to be able to identify what is human wisdom, what's human foolishness. We have to know it and identify it, but also we have to avoid it. How many of you, be honest with me, seriously, we can be transparent with each other here because there's no condemnation. We will not condemn you. How many of you can think of a phase of your life where you did things your way, it was the hard way, and it was the painful way? Raise your hand. The hard way, the painful way, and you blew it. You blew it. Here's what the scriptures say. The scriptures say you can choose to do things God's way or your way, and you have to be careful that you always know when you're choosing to do things your way. It's the foolish way, and it always leads to hardship. Sometimes I remember growing up, and I remember watching people who I would consider people who are far from God, who are doing things that were very successful in their life. I would do things this way, they would do things that way. They would have fruitfulness and abundance, and I would find myself really struggling along, and I would wonder, why do those people kind of make their way successfully? And after a while, you learn that the scriptures teach you to keep doing things God's way, because in the end, all the scales balance. In the very end, it all comes to fruition for those who do things God's way, of course. So be alert to your own instinct. Listen, be alert to your own instinct to trust your own wisdom. Anybody here instinctively just trust their own wisdom? I mean, trust their own decisions, their own impulses, their own instincts? Here's what the scriptures teach us. Proverbs chapter 3, verses 7 and 8. Listen to this. I love this. This is so bold. By the way, if you don't want a little, every now and then, if you don't want a little slap across the face, don't read Proverbs. Just skip on to something different. Don't read Proverbs. Just a little slap in the face. Here's one for you. Don't be impressed with your own wisdom. You're not that smart. You're not that wise. Instead, fear the Lord, turn away from evil, then you will have healing for your body and strength for your bones. How? When I recognize that there is a way in which I will do this and it's foolish, it's my own way, I'm gonna choose not to do that, I'm gonna be alert to it, I'm gonna avoid that, I'm gonna do things God's way because I recognize that a fool, only a fool will trust their own wisdom and follow their own impulses and their instincts and their own emotions. Also, fools will use the Proverbs as a means by which they kind of are trying to extract for themselves some prosperity. So they see Proverbs as not a principle where if you live by these principles, then you're going to have a healthy, good life. Instead, they see them as kind of a promise where you can kind of speak the promise, depend on the promise, implement the promise, and there's instant results. We learn in Ecclesiastes that's not true. We learn in Job's, even more painfully, that's the opposite of truth. But if you put them all together and you live according to these patterns and principles, your life will go the way of the good life. Generally speaking, overall, in the pattern of your life. And that's how we interpret these Proverbs, so that it's not just a promise to be implemented, but it's a pattern and principle to be lived. These are general principles. So, lastly, number three. There's a part of this life, this good life, that we have to do something, okay? You kind of knew this was coming. Well, here it is. We are able to, we are invited to, God has made it possible for us, get this, to get our wisdom on demand. So you don't now only have to get your Netflix, your cable TV on demand, your music on demand. Now, God says, my wisdom is on demand, and all you have to do, according to James, is ask for wisdom. God gives wisdom generously to you, and when he gives you wisdom generously, it's because he knows that it will cause you to live a life of faith and abundance. God will not rebuke you for asking. Now, I love that using the devices that we have now, you can they're like tools, right? You can harm your life or you can help your life. And one of the things I love about my devices, with the Bible app, I can get myself in a reading plan that allows me to read a proverb a day. Read the Proverbs every day. And one of the ways that you and I can get wisdom on demand is to be sure that we're reading the Proverbs every day. You can read the Proverbs on the Bible app and set yourself up a reading plan to do that. If you don't know what the Bible app is, don't worry about it. You probably just use the good old-fashioned paper and bound Bible anyway. Read a proverb a day. Also, there's a great daily devotional written by Tim Keller that you might love called God's Wisdom for Navigating Life. This is on the back of your notes, so you don't have to remember to write this down. Called God's Wisdom for Navigating Your Life, a proverb every day on some fantastic topics that are relevant to your life. I've come across recently a little devotional book called Wise Up by Marty Makowski, who wrote our curriculum for our Kids Central, and it's called Wise Up, and you as a parent or family or guardian or grandparent can teach your kids wisdom, something out of the Proverbs every day. Secondly, not only do we read the Proverbs daily, but we refer to the Proverbs when we're facing difficult decisions. I mean, isn't it easy to forget that when we're facing a complicated decision in our life, we don't have to kind of come up with this random wisdom on our own? Sure, we can kind of call someone that we know and trust, but the scriptures give us all kinds of principles on how to face life's biggest challenges. And that wisdom helps us to navigate. So rather than using your unreliable emotions, instead we can turn to God's timeless wisdom, which will help steer our life. You might ask yourself, why is my life so complicated? Why is my life so full of turmoil? It's possible that when you face life decisions, you turn and trust your own wisdom rather than relying on, turning to, and using the wisdom that God gives us, the wisdom that God offers you. There's a whole list of phenomenal proverbs that I kind of picked out and put on the back of your handout notes today. But I wanted to explain one of them to you, not explain one of them, but mention one of them to you. And it's in the family one, and it goes like this. So Proverbs 22:15, listen to this. If you don't have it in the back page there, that's okay. You can listen, but listen to this one. Here's a proverb on raising a family. A youngster's heart is filled with foolishness. And all the parents said? Amen. A little one's heart, a child's heart, a youngster's heart is foolish, full of foolishness. But physical discipline will drive it far away. What drives the foolishness out of the heart of a child? Discipline. I remember when I found that scripture text, I was like, I love this. I'm going to use this to beat my child. I mean, to love my child into good behavior. And my firstborn, we realize now that my firstborn got all of our trial runs. If you're a firstborn out here, you know exactly what I'm talking about. On behalf of parents everywhere, forgive us. I remember struggling with my firstborn child who was implementing her will. And it happened to be in contrast and in conflict with dad's will. And I said to her, I said, listen, she's probably 2.5 years old, I'm guessing. Raquel will correct me when we're done here. She'll tell me exactly what age she was. I said, sweetie, listen, there is foolishness in your heart. God gave me the job of getting it out. She said, there is no foolishness in my heart. She started to scratch her chest like, you think you know, but you don't know. There's no foolishness in my heart. I said, see the way you're acting? That's foolish. That right there is foolish. My job to drive it out. Parents, there's wisdom in the Proverbs. If you've been offended, you know that the scriptures in Proverbs say it's better to be wounded by a friend than kissed by an enemy. It's better to be offended by someone you love than it is to have your enemies kissing up to you and flattering you. Embrace the wound if you have a friend who's offended you. When you're thinking about retaliating, keep this in mind. The proverb says, don't retaliate because your own soul is nourished when you are kind, but you destroy yourself when you're cruel to somebody. There's some specifics here that I think will be helpful to you and help you live a good life. Scriptures teach us, children, listen to your father when he corrects you. Don't neglect your mother's instruction. Then what you learn from them will crown you with grace. They will be a chain of honor around your neck. I just saw a bunch of parents jabbing their kids. Pay attention. Thirdly, lastly, a couple things you can do. Read the Proverbs every day. Refer to the Proverbs when you're facing a life difficulty, challenge, what have you. And thirdly, here's where it starts. You receive Jesus. Receive Jesus. Apart from Jesus, there is no wisdom. And when you receive Jesus, here's what you've done. You've recognized that there's a road. There's a road that you can follow that's your way. And there's also another road that you can follow, which is the way. It is the way, the truth, and the life. It's Jesus' way. And he calls us. And when he says, come to me, here's what he says. There's two roads. One is wide. Everybody takes this road. It's easy. But there's another road. It's a narrow road. It's a hard road. But when someone takes this road, they find life, and they find life everlasting. And Proverbs is basically this invitation. You could do it your way, or you could do it God's way. And Jesus eventually says, I am the way for you to choose. And today I want to invite you, if you've never done this before, to literally think to yourself, is my way been the foolish way? Am I living for myself, by myself, with myself? And is it possible that the invitation today in God's work in my heart is to invite me to a new way? Not just so that my life could be prosperous, so that I can literally know God by knowing his son. I invite you today to consider this. The foolish way may appear to be wise, but it's the way of evil, separation from God, rather than the way of fear of God. And the Lord gives wisdom so that we may walk the right way. And the most wise thing the human heart can do is to reject the narrow, foolish way of living for yourself and literally run down the path of choosing Christ, resurrected, and returning again And then you discover it's indeed true, all the wisdom that God has offered us, I've discovered in Jesus. There's a way that seems right to a man, but in the end it leads to death, separation, frustration, turmoil. Today I invite you, if you've never done this before, today I invite you to pick from those two roads, choose Jesus. Embrace him, submit to him, fear him in all the right ways.